Business Disability Forum, creating a disability smart world together.
Welcome back to our podcast series, called If You Don't Mind Me Asking. I'm Dan Cady, and here again with my co-host, Lucy Ruck. This is the second part in our podcast around grief. So welcome back to those of you that have come to explore this in a little bit more detail. As we shared last time, this can be quite a triggering subject for listeners, and we will be touching on grief in a number of situations, including the loss of a child. But for those of you who wish, let's continue with those questions.
Yeah, my triggers have almost been more in personal circumstances and stuff rather than employment. I think I've also been quite lucky and I've always been very upfront about my disability, even though the prosthetic I wear is quite subtle, so people wouldn't necessarily know about it. But that's just the way I am. I am upfront about stuff, probably to my own detriment. There's probably jobs I haven't got because I've gone, I'm going to need time off to have leg appointments. And they've gone, okay, and step back. That's fine. That's their loss, not my problem. But that is from a point of privilege when I've been able to make those decisions. So I very much realise that. But I've lost my train of thought now. Go on, what were we talking about? The
stages.
Yeah.
The stages of grief and feeling it.
Oh, so personal. It comes around in personal stuff. So things like we did a girl's holiday to Ibiza a few years ago. Now, I thought, lovely. Ibiza sounds like a lovely island. I was not thinking, because I'm in my 40s, let's go clubbing in Ibiza. That was not on my radar. So suddenly I get these links through to all these clubs we're going to go to in Ibiza. And I'm like, and one of them was like an ocean beach club or something where everyone's like strutting around in their bikinis and stuff. And I'm like, I'm going to have to take my waterproof leg. I'm going to have to walk around. And I'm just not prepared to do that. It's not me. I don't want to do it anyway. And I'm going to feel really self-conscious because, number one, everyone's going to be in their 20s. And, you know, I've had two children and whatever. But it was kind of, do you know what? That absolutely made me sob my heart out. And this, we're talking like 5-6 years ago. So this is like 24 years after my accident. You get these things that trigger you, and people just didn't think. You know, friends just didn't think. They wanted to do this. That sounded like fun. Let's go. And that's fine. They weren't being nasty. Well, I hope they weren't being nasty. No, I'm sure they weren't being nasty. But it is that stuff that becomes very triggering, and they would not know the implications of that and what you would go through psychologically to kind of cope with that. Now, we did go to Ibiza. A few of us didn't go to the beach club. We stayed at the hotel, drank cheap all-inclusive cocktails, which was marvellous. And then we ended up going to a 1980s evening with Tony Handley from Spandau Ballet. So, you know, it was like a win-win, you know.
Oh, really?
We had a crack in it. I mean, Tapau were there and Bucks Fizz and all sorts. So it was a classic night. But do you know what I mean?
Again, a lot of this comes down to personal perception, doesn't it? Like
Ken said earlier. This is probably the nightmare for many people listening. But it is that thing in terms of sometimes you have to say no, sometimes you have to be, you do get upset about stuff, and it's really tough, and you can't always see those things coming. Now, that I think because I've been lucky with employment, it comes through in other areas, but I think we all hit these barriers and these triggers for us at different times. I'm going to shift the conversation on a little bit, and this is a tricky question, but we don't like to shy away from these things. So I'm going to pass one over to you, Chantal. And I think when we were thinking up this podcast and trying to frame some questions for it, we kind of wondered, is it okay to compare the grief of acquiring a disability to the grief we might experience when losing a child? It feels almost slightly disrespectful and belittling of that different kind of grief. And the more typical grief. And I just, you know, we've got you here, Chantal, and you have experience of both, unfortunately, whether that's the right term or not. What's your view on that? Does it resonate? Do you think it is disrespectful?
Oh, no, I don't. I think it's different kinds of grief. But like we said, you know, grief always comes through in stages. So it's not always like, this is how I'm going to feel. It's, you know, after Bradley passed away, initially, it was just like an autopilot. You know, we just went on, okay, what do we need to do? We need to organize a funeral. We did, you know, we've had other boys in the hospital. All the other kids still had to be fed and get to school, and homework had to be done. And then only afterwards, it started coming out, you know, like, oh, yeah, I wonder how, you know, I wonder what colour's eyes he would have had. I wonder what colour hair he would have had. You know, it would have been similar to the other ones. And then that's the time where grief like creeps in. And I think it's very similar for me, like with a disability, you know, it's not always like I didn't go for a stage of acceptance. I went for a stage as, okay, after the car accident, what do I have to do now? Because it's impacting me. So I want to get back into my life. I want to do what I need to do so I can get out of rehab. I want to start driving around, you know, so I had like tech sheets. I needed to do all of those things. And then I think like after a few years, when all of those things started falling into place is when the grief comes, you know, like when you can't do things anymore, or you think back about, oh, I could have done that. And I think for me, comparing it to the loss of the child, it's very similar. So when it's like birthday times for the other ones, I like think about him, you know, when it things like, you know, moving to school or starting a new class or, you know, times like that, it creeps in. And I think it's like, for me, that's both grief and both a loss.
Thank you, Chantal.
I suppose it is sort of like when you're comparing these different elements of grief and the different situations that we are going to get them in as well. A lot of this time I've been thinking about as well, and rather selfishly. So I've been part-time carer for my mum who has Lewy bodies, Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, and it was very quick onset. So literally over a period of like 2 to 3 months, mum was very unrecognizable in terms of character and the person that she is. But, you know, she's still with us, but she's a very different person now. And I knew someone in my 20s, so a good, well, 20 years ago, whose dad had early onset Alzheimer's. So I've always had this funny sort of relationship to it in thinking of the, because it was around the same time I'd lost my dad as well, as a way when we lose someone, we kind of have a period where we then try to reset the narrative, it feels like. So I actually sort of did the eulogy at my dad's funeral. So in a way, that was kind of a very obvious way of, now you sort of have a bit more control over a narrative and, you know, helping you and family to get better. But then with something like Alzheimer's or dementia, where you have this sort of very significant loss, but the person is still there, and then you come into this sort of weird bit of guilt as well, as sort of like a feeling like, you know, can you say that you're grieving for someone when, you know, you are actively day by day still supporting them as well, and going, oh, I wish my fiance was meeting my mum of 2.5 years ago, as opposed to sort of, because she's still here and she's still lovely, but is very different as well. I don't know. I think it's a funny way of, like, you know, having to put your own little bit of guilt aside as well, and realizing, like I said, Chantal, sort of like what is loss and what is grief. Kind of going back to something that I started to probably ramble about earlier as well. We're just going to move the conversation on a little bit. Again, from our experiences.
I think that's really valid, that kind of double grief thing. And I think you often hear that of someone when they do have Alzheimer's or a similar condition, where you lose them twice. You lose the person and the personality they were, and then you finally lose them. And that guilt, I think I really get that. And I think actually it's okay to talk about it, but isn't it silly how we kind of do feel guilty about feeling guilty about it, and we get off. It's like double guilt.
But guilt is part of grief, because whatever stage or whatever your loss is, whatever you're grieving, you will always at some point feel guilty. You know, one of my aunts had Alzheimer's, and I watched her go from this vivacious creature when we were younger that used to wind us up, and we had a love-hate relationship with her because she was a proper wind-up merchant, to somebody who didn't even remember how to feed herself. So I remember feeling that immense amount of sadness for her loss. But then when she died, I felt guilty. I was a nurse. What did I do? Did I live? Was there anything I couldn't have done? Blah, blah, blah. You know, all of those things. And I think we do that. And I think that it's a human emotion that actually it's not wrong to feel that way. It's absolutely part of who we are as people and as human beings. And the other thing as well, I think it's really, really, really important to say, is from what Chantal said and Lucy and what Daniel's just shared with us, is that all three of them and my own lived experience, I guess, are slightly different. But hear what we're saying, that all that has a common denominator. We've all felt angry. We've all felt sad. We've all felt what if, and we've all had a little bit of guilt. And it might be guilt for, if I hadn't walked on that train track, this wouldn't have happened and my parents wouldn't have suffered, as an example. Mm. Or if I, you know, hadn't had a motorcycle accident, what would have happened to my baby? And Daniel, the normal guilt feelings about caring for a parent who you miss, but is there.
Yeah.
That's a really human emotion, and we have to remember that as well. It's important to remember that.
Yeah, it's what kind of what you were saying earlier, Karen, is it's not really prescriptive in the way that you have these stages. It can happen at any time, and it is ongoing. So saying from our experiences, we always hear that positivity of disabled people talking about how they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't be without their disability, how their disability is so important to them. So I was just wondering about what our thoughts from our personal perspectives are on that in terms of, again, the grief and kind of what we were touching on earlier of, I suppose, in that way of this comes back almost like to the guilt, or to recognizing that you have these thoughts that, if not negative, then that are, you know, wishing something away.
I'll start us off on that, and then I will pass to Chantal. I think for me, my accident made me who I am now, and I'm quite happy with who I am now. I like this person and the life she has, which I touched on earlier. But if I could continue this life and this sort of flow, but have my leg, I would have it every single time. 10 out of 10, I would have my leg back, please, because that would make my life a heck of a lot easier. So although I'm fine with everything and I cope with it all, I wouldn't go back and become that other Lucy and follow that other life necessarily, because I'd be a hairdresser somewhere in the South or something, and I'm sure that would be delightful. But it wouldn't be the fulfillment that I have now doing what I do and everything else. And it wouldn't have led me down the path of meeting my husband, having my children, everything else. But if I could now just sort of have that mind life, how it went, and then sort of catch up and then go, oh, there you go, can we grow you a leg back? You can have a leg and that's all fine. Then I would happily do that, I think. Does that make sense? Chantal, I don't know what your view is on that.
Absolutely. Yes, 100%. Obviously, I also love my life. I've got beautiful children, beautiful husband, really like active life. And I always think to myself, you know, I never knew what I wanted to become. I knew I studied, you know, 7 years of psychology, and I wanted to be a psychometrist, and I started working as a psychometrist. But I always felt like there was more. Like I wanted to do something else, but I didn't know what. And then I broke my back, and it felt like, you know, like I feel like I can be the voice for other people, but, you know, like acquire a disability, you know, born with a disability and wanting to work. So it feels like if I didn't have that experience, I maybe not would have, you know, chose the direction that I am, you know, the job that I have, which I absolutely love. It's like helping businesses recruit and retain people with disabilities and making sure, you know, opening doors for other people. So I would take it back in a heartbeat, but I would like to keep what I have.
We want it all, basically, is what we're saying.
And why not?
Yeah.
Again, it's not binary, is it? Again, this sort of like feeling of sort of like if there should be a right or a wrong answer or sides on that, as ever, just always comes back down to the individual, doesn't it?
Yeah, because yeah. I don't know if this is true or if it's just an urban myth. I don't know. But I remember hearing a few years ago that Stevie Wonder was offered the opportunity to have surgery to see again. And he said no, because I would lose my artistic ability to write. And I don't want that. Mm. And that's because he thinks and processes and feels about the world very differently. And he's navigated the world as a non-seeing person. That's what he refers to himself as. But he sees things that we don't necessarily see, and he didn't want to lose that. Now, I don't know if that's true or false. He hasn't told me that. I don't know him, unfortunately. But I do believe that is possibly true, because yeah. I do believe there are people that acquire a disability. I think if you're born with a disability, some people would say, well, I don't know what I'm missing. I don't know what that feels like or what that looks like or what that sounds like, because I've never been able to feel it, see it, or hear it, as an example. But if you acquire it, for some people, they will acquire something else, something positive from what some would see as negative. And they would answer that question very differently. And they would say, yes, I have a great life, but I'm happy to stay and never go back. So I think it's very different for very different people.
Yeah, I agree. And I think maybe it's another podcast for us to do and try and get some different views, because this is just us here today. So I'm going to come to our kind of last question about what advice would we give to colleagues who might be managing or working alongside someone who is grieving, whether it's from a disability, from a massive change, from a caring responsibility, or whatever that might be. What bits of advice would we give them? Chantal, I'm going to come to you first for any thoughts you've got.
So we actually recently had one on the advice service that actually touched really similar, exactly our topic today. And, you know, seeing the person as a whole and not just a quick fix. It doesn't mean if you're, you know, if you acquired disability 6 months ago that you're going to be ready to go back to work and that's going to be it. There might be times that you have to take off. So, you know, taking it slow and seeing, recognizing a person as a person, you know, as a whole person, and not necessarily just think, okay, you've had your time to come back to office, your sick leave is done, and that's it, because it might not be.
Thank you. Karen, to you next.
Two words: listen, and well, more than two, but listen and forget your own unconscious bias. They're the two things that I would be saying, or your even conscious bias. Listen and forget about how you think and feel.
Thanks, Karen. Dan, I'm going to come to you as well.
Oh, thank you, Luz. I would definitely, for me, it is all about remembering the individual, and everyone will experience grief and loss in different ways. And there is so much, and this comes down to so much that we do when you're asking how you can help and how they are. And then active listening. It's not just a question and a tick box, but actually listening to what they're saying, but also recognizing what they're not saying, and how you as an employer or a colleague can then support. And key, what Chantal said as well, that isn't for then like a 2 week period. This isn't just as someone beds back into the workplace as well. As we've heard, these things can come up at any time. There's all sorts of reasons. And so I think that's just generally good practice anyway, to have that sort of relationship with both employees and your colleagues.
Thanks, Dan. I would say, don't pity someone, be empathetic and listen, and just check in. I would say every now and again, and sometimes people just appreciate being asked, how are you doing, and how are you coping with the loss of a parent? And you might get floods of tears, but you know, they might not. They might go, oh, it's really nice of you to remember that. Thank you. And sometimes that's enough. Don't worry that you're going to get floods of tears every time. You might sometimes, but you know what? Just get on with it. It's harder for them than it is for you. So just show a little bit of empathy and support people, because that's what, being selfish, that's what we want for ourselves when we're going through this stuff. So let's just, you know, reciprocate that a little bit more. So. Yeah. I'm going to finish that there. We could probably do another couple of hours on this. Thank you ever so much for Chantal and Karen for joining us today. You can find us all on LinkedIn, and Chris, our producer, will add all that stuff into some bio stuff for us. So thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back again soon. And we do hope this does resonate with you in some way, and you found this useful in terms of a different way of expressing dealing with disability and everything that goes around it. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. You can find future episodes on major streaming platforms. Search Business Disability Forum or at businessdisabilityforum.org.uk and search podcasts. You can also watch the series on our YouTube channel. Search for Business Disability Forum. Please do share and leave us a rating. Business Disability Forum is the leading business membership organisation in disability inclusion. We work in partnership with business, government and disabled people to remove barriers to inclusion. businessdisabilityforum.org.uk.